Today we want to consider, as we're looking at the life of Jesus and the Gospel of Mark, the gathering storm that was approaching. Last week we talked about how Jesus began to say things and do things that were controversial. And today, already here in the end of chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3, we already see that He has pushed them to the point where they're done. They don't want to hear anymore. They don't like it anymore. As we think about that, is it possible to have too much of a good thing? We might think not, and then we might admit yes. You know, I love ice cream, especially chocolatey ice creams. You could never tell by looking at me because I am so slim and trim, but I do like to eat it. However, I've been told that too much of it, which is more than like a tablespoon every 6 weeks, is not really good for you. But it tastes so good. But it's so fattening. And I could eat a half a gallon in one sitting. And probably, if truth be told, there have probably been times when I've done that, or close to it. It's just so good. But too much of a good thing is not good for me. And that's true even in our moral realm about some things. We say, well, it's good. Is it good? Yes, it's good. We're told, however, in the Scriptures to let our moderation be known to all men. And there's good reason for that, because extremes, even extremes in something, for example, like self-control or sexual restraint, which we would say, is that good? Is it good to have self-control? Yes. Is it good to have sexual restraint? Yes. But can it go too far? Well, consider Gandhi, for example. Quite an admirable guy in a lot of ways. Very self-controlled. But at one point, when he was 37 years old, he gave up sexual relationship with his wife for the rest of his life until age 78. Well, that wasn't good. That's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches husbands and wives are not to keep themselves from one another. He went too far. Of course, he wasn't a Christian, so he wasn't following what the Scriptures teach. But we see where something that we would say in many people would be a good thing, to have that kind of restraint and self-control, to be celibate. But in his case, it went too far because it deprived his wife of what was her wifely right. Sometimes we strive so hard in some moral areas that we may actually go too far, like Gandhi did. It's possible to have too much of a good thing, in other words. Now, certainly, our relationship with God and our love for Jesus, we can never have too much love for Jesus, too much love for God. But we do have to be careful that when it comes to our religion, we don't allow that to go beyond what God wants. And that's the problem that Jesus had with the Pharisees. They said they loved God, and they certainly taught about God and talked about God and talked about doing what God wanted, but a lot of times there were other issues that went far beyond their love for God. They had too much concern. We talked in our adult class in the auditorium this morning about how upset they were when Jesus ate with some people that they didn't think you should associate with. They were much too righteous to talk to and spend time with a lowly sinner. And if we're not careful, we could fall into that same trap. They were too pure to risk being contaminated by someone who was unclean. And Jesus was the opposite. Jesus went and ate with the sinners and touched the lepers. And it drove them crazy. They had so much concern for the commands that Moses had given that they did not even recognize when someone greater than Moses came on the scene. They didn't recognize him. And they weren't ready to follow him. They had taken it to such an extreme that it had become something that was no longer good for them. And one of the areas where they did this was with the Sabbath day. The Sabbath was a good thing. It was a law that God had given. God didn't give laws that weren't good. But as we consider the way that they viewed the Sabbath, it became problematic. And something that was intended by God to be a good thing became something that was not a good thing. So in the Old Testament, what was the Sabbath? We don't perhaps sometimes know all that much about it because under the new law, we aren't commanded to keep the Sabbath any longer. And so maybe we've kind of let it go. Well, don't need to know about that. So let's consider some things. In Exodus chapter 20 and verses 8 through 11, the first time God gives that commandment about the Sabbath, He says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall work and labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So He tells them, this one day every week, you don't work. And you don't let anyone else in your city work. He repeats some of these thoughts in Exodus 31, verses 12 through 18. But in verses 12 through 18, He goes even further. So they had the fourth commandment, which was the Sabbath day rest. They were supposed to remember it. They were supposed to rest, not do any work. They could do just about anything else, really, as long as it wasn't work. The problem became defining what was work. But what we also find in chapter 31 is that breaking the Sabbath law was an offense that was punishable by death. This wasn't one of those sins that if you committed it, you just took your little lamb down to the priest and they sacrificed it and it was all okay. If you broke this commandment, you would be stoned to death. That's a pretty important commandment. But keeping the Sabbath day was more than just a religious observance. Chapter 31 tells us that it was a sign of the covenant that the people had with God. He says in verse 13, "Above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath because it is holy for you, and everyone who profanes it shall be put to death." And He goes on to again say, any work, anybody who does any work, you're going to die. You're going to be put to death. That sounds like a pretty significant commandment. And you would say, well, how could they possibly be going too far? I mean, God said, don't do any work on it. Nobody. And anybody who does work is going to be executed for that. Well, how could they go too far with that, a command like that? Well, the problem was, what was work. What did it mean to work? And we'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. There were even examples given of a man who was gathering some wood on the Sabbath day. He was picking up sticks, and they caught him. And Moses asked God, "What are we supposed to do with him?" And God said, "You put him to death." That's exactly what you do with him. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp. Everybody had to participate. Ezekiel said that failure to keep the Sabbath day was one of the reasons that God almost destroyed the children of Israel in the wilderness. Nehemiah blamed the Babylonian captivity partially on the Jews failing to keep the Sabbath day, Nehemiah 13:18. And Jeremiah kind of echoed that in Jeremiah 17:19-27. So as we think about this, this is a pretty important thing. And the Pharisees no doubt thought, we're doing what God wants. We're making sure that this is being kept like it should be. But what about their traditions? You see, by the time Jesus came along, some 1,500 years, give or take, after the writing of the law on Mount Sinai, the Jews had hundreds of additional regulations about the Sabbath day and about how to keep it. God said, don't work, keep the Sabbath day holy. Well, they had to define what is work. That's part of what's happening in Numbers 15 when they catch the guy picking up sticks. Is picking up sticks work? Well, apparently in that case it certainly was. So the question was, what qualified as work? And that debate raged for hundreds of years. Consider this quote from Barclay in the mind of Jesus. This wasn't enough for the scribes, the idea of don't do any work, keep the Sabbath holy. This had to be worked out. Hundreds and hundreds of rules and regulations about what could and what could not be done on the Sabbath day. In the Mishnah, which is a written down version of all of the oral traditions, the regulations about the Sabbath are 24 chapters long. And one of the certain famous rabbis spent 2.5 years making a detailed study of the Sabbath day. How would you like to study the Sabbath day for 2.5 years? Most of you, I mean, we've been doing it for 15 minutes, and most of you are, okay, that's enough about the Sabbath day. I don't want to hear anymore. Can you imagine 2.5 years spent on this topic? But that tells us what kind of a culture Jesus entered into. When he came, what was going on with these people? So let me give you just a couple of examples. A man could walk 2,000 cubits on the Sabbath, but not more. That's about 3,000 feet, a little over half a mile. Right? You could walk that far, but no further. Certain knots could be tied on the Sabbath, and others could not. Vinegar could be swallowed to help a sore throat, but it couldn't be gargled on the Sabbath. No woman was to look in the mirror on the Sabbath, lest seeing a gray hair, she might be tempted to pull it out. and then violate the law, or at least their tradition. No fire could be kindled on the Sabbath, certainly. In the case where someone was near death, a doctor, a physician could be summoned. But if you just had a broken bone, too bad, you got to wait. That's not important enough. Anyone who has sprained a foot or a hand can't pour cold water on it, but he could stick it in running water if that was available nearby. Because again, you can't walk more than 2,000 cubits. Of course, if you had a sprained ankle, you might not want to walk 2,000 cubits anyway. The two main schools of thought, Hillel and Shammai, these are the two most famous rabbis in the generation right before Jesus came, even discussed and disagreed about the question of whether an egg that a hen laid on the Sabbath day could be eaten or not. Because remember, the Sabbath law said your livestock aren't supposed to work on the Sabbath day either. So if that unrighteous evil hen laid an egg on the Sabbath day and worked like that, could you eat it, or would you be guilty if you ate that egg? So you can see the extremes to which they go. And those things come from Fosdick's writing, The Man from Nazareth. And he talks about that. In another place, Barclay also explains the Sabbath law forbade work on the Sabbath day. And to carry a burden was work. Everybody agreed. But what was a burden? How far do you take that? How much did this thing have to weigh that you were carrying before it became a burden? Could a man go out on the Sabbath if he had nails in his shoes or sandals? I mean, was that carrying a burden with him if there were those nails in his shoes? Could he wear a false tooth? I mean, you know, that's a burden he's carrying around. It's not part of him. If a crippled man went out with his wooden leg, was he carrying a burden? A man couldn't carry a stone or throw a stone on the Sabbath day. But how big of a stone? A stone big enough to throw at a bird, or a stone big enough to throw at a cow? Which one? Where's the line? A man couldn't write on the Sabbath. But did that apply if he wrote in some way that left no permanent mark? So could he write with his finger if he didn't actually write with ink? I mean, you can see the absurdity of some of the lengths to which they went to try to nail down exactly when all God had said was don't work on the Sabbath day. So clearly, as we look at these things, here's an example of too much of a good thing. God intended the Sabbath day just to be a day for them to be able to rest from their work. And yet, they had gone and gone and gone to such an extreme that it became a problem. And it eventually comes to a head with Jesus. As we see Jesus coming on the scene, there are seven major controversies recorded in the Gospels between Jesus and the religious leaders over this one issue, the Sabbath. In each case, they're more strict, they're more conservative than Jesus is. He looks like the liberal who is flaunting their traditions And more than that, in their opinion, he's disobeying God's word. His attitude toward the Sabbath is shown in the Gospels to be one of the primary reasons that the Pharisees seek to kill him. And we see that right here in this passage that we're looking at this morning. In Mark 2, in verses 23 through 28, first we see the eating on the Sabbath day. Now, obviously you could eat, but it was not wrong to eat on the Sabbath day in and of itself. But what the disciples did went way too far. Because the disciples were walking through a field. And as they were walking through this field, there was some grain growing. They had the nerve to reach over and pluck some of that grain off of its stalk and rub the little seeds, the little wheat berries or whatever they were, out onto their hand and then eat them. The Pharisees, verse 24 tells us, said, "Look, why are your disciples doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And Jesus takes a very interesting approach here. David was one of their heroes. David could just about do no wrong. And so he says, "Well, let me ask you a question here. Haven't you read what David did when he was in need and was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, the showbread from the tabernacle, which was not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those that were with him." He said, "You're condemning my disciples because they picked up a little grain growing on the side of the road and ate it. Let me tell you what your hero did. He went in to God's place and ate the bread that was reserved for the priest, and you don't condemn him for that." He points out their hypocrisy. And then he says to them, "The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath." But he also establishes here that human need, like hunger in this case, superseded the Sabbath law. And so they were not in violation of the Sabbath law, even though they certainly were in violation of the Pharisees' Sabbath traditions. But they weren't really doing anything wrong. They were just eating. The Pharisees, of course, thought, "Oh, look at them. How dare they? They're out here reaping the fields." I dare say plucking a couple of heads of grain off and eating them is not harvesting the fields. So his question to them basically was, how could David do what he did and not be condemned, and yet you're condemning these? But then we see the real biggie, the one that really causes the stir. And that's the case of him healing someone on the Sabbath day at the beginning of Mark 3. Both of these related to the Sabbath day and the way that the Pharisees viewed the Sabbath day. But this one was the real kicker, because this wasn't just Jesus' disciples and it wasn't just him justifying them. This was Jesus himself doing something that they had clearly said. Remember, the doctor could help you if it was a life-threatening situation where you were going to die. That was okay. But if it was just a sprain or a broken bone, too bad. But look at Mark chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. "Again he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand." Given what happens in verse 2, I have to wonder if this man with the withered hand was put there on purpose by the Pharisees in a place where Jesus would see him, because they knew that Jesus was compassionate and liked to heal people. And they wanted, verse 2 tells us, they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath. This has all of the distinguishing marks of a setup right here, doesn't it? But they didn't watch just to see if he'd heal on the Sabbath. They watched to see on the Sabbath so that they could accuse him. They weren't just curious. They weren't just wondering, well, I wonder if he thinks it's okay to heal somebody on the Sabbath. They know. They already believed it was wrong, and they wanted to be able to accuse him when he did something. So he calls the man with the withered hand up, and then he asks them the question, is it lawful? Is it right? Is it good? Is it okay to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath day? Jesus here equates his doing nothing to help this man with doing harm. This fits with what Jesus' golden rule was: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now it's interesting, because there are a lot of traditions out there, a lot of teachings out there, moral teachings about how to treat others, that are kind of similar to Jesus' golden rule. There's some that say, don't hurt somebody. There are some that say, don't hurt somebody unless they hurt you first. You know, there are a lot of different things like that. But Jesus's went further. His said, not only do you not hurt somebody, not only do you stop somebody else from hurting somebody if you can, but you actually go do good to that person like you would want them to do to you. So Jesus here, when he asks them, should you do good things on the Sabbath or do harm on the Sabbath? In Jesus' mind, leaving this man with his withered up hand was doing harm. Even though he hadn't injured that hand, wasn't his fault the guy had a withered hand, but he could fix it. And if he refused to fix it, then he would be harming that individual. James says it this way: to the one who knows the good he ought to do and he doesn't do it, to him it's sin. See, Jesus' argument basically is, I'd be sinning if I don't help this man. And he goes on. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm? To save life or to kill? Now, obviously, if he doesn't help this guy with the withered hand, it's not going to kill the guy. Not right then. But in a society where manual labor was the way of life, having a withered hand was going to keep this man from being able to work. In the long run, it was certainly going to cause harm to him. And possibly even death. But notice this part. They were silent. They didn't answer. He asked them for their interpretation of this situation, and they didn't answer him. And so, he heals it. But look at the way this storm is gathering. He looked around at them in anger. He was angry with them. because they cared more about their traditional interpretation about the Sabbath day than they did about this human life. He was grieved at their hardness of heart. They would rather see this man suffer and continue to suffer than for Jesus to take the opportunity to make him better. That is cold-blooded. That is hard-hearted. Who wants to see somebody suffer when that person doesn't have to suffer? I mean, now we've all been in situations where we were suffering or somebody we cared about was suffering and we couldn't do anything about it. And that's a horrible situation to be in. When you know somebody's suffering and you can't help. But Jesus was angry at them because here was the opportunity to help and they didn't want it to happen. And of course we see how hard-hearted they really were. He says to the man, stretch out your hand. The man stretches out his hand and it's healed back to 100% health. But the Pharisees, they went out and immediately held counsel with some of their worst enemies. You know the old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend? I guess that's the way the Pharisees felt. Jesus had become such an enemy that they went out and met with the Herodians. Now the Herodians were the ones who supported King Herod. King Herod was a descendant of Esau who had been put in position of kingship over the children of Jacob. And these Herodians were those who supported one of Esau's spawn being king over Israel. They despised the Herodians, but they hated Jesus more. And so they went and they held a council. They conspired with the Herodians against him how to destroy him. That's how much they hated him. That they would consort with their old enemies in order to get rid of him. We have to ask ourselves, though, have we got too much of a good thing? Are there areas in our religious life where we've made the mistake the Pharisees have made? Where we've taken one commandment of God and we have added so much to it that it's not what He commanded anymore. It's just our own tradition and teaching. Have we gotten to the point with something where our righteousness by keeping our tradition and our moral edges that we've created have gotten to the point that it keeps us from doing good to others around us, where we would actually neglect other people? As you were on the way to church this morning, if you'd have passed, and I hope you didn't pass anybody that was in serious danger on the road, on the way, would you stop to help them? Or would you say, oh, I can't be late for church. I'm just going to have to leave them laying there on the side of the road. That's kind of, when I read the story of the Good Samaritan, and I see the priest and the Levite heading on to Jerusalem, passing by this guy, I'm pretty sure they were probably on their way to work at the temple. I mean, that had to be important. You didn't want to be late for that. So, yeah, guy's beating up, bleeding, and dying over there, but don't want to be late for church. Jesus makes it clear, both in the case of eating grain and of the healing of the man's hand, that human needs are important. Now, we're not talking about wants or feelings or something like that necessarily. real needs are important. And if we apply God's rules and build onto those rules so that we are hurting people instead of helping people, we've gotten too much of a good thing. God's commandments are to help people, to bring them to Him, to help them live a better life if they will obey them. Jesus also teaches us that it's always right to do good. Even if there's a conflict, even if somebody else doesn't want you to do it, it's still right to do what's good, to do good to others. Jesus lists mercy as one of the greater commands, far above tithing, far above the keeping of the Sabbath. In other places, when he has conflicts with them about the Sabbath, he says, "Well, you let your ox loose to go get a drink of water on the Sabbath day, don't you?" Mercy is high up. Doing good to others is high up on God's list of priorities. In fact, Jesus says, loving the Lord your God is the first commandment, but the second one, just slightly under that, is loving your neighbor as yourself, which includes the way that we treat them, doing good for them, helping them when they need it. And of course, we see him teaching that God's rules were made for man. God made man and then made rules to help man's life run more smoothly if he'll follow them. He didn't make a bunch of rules and then create a man to follow those rules. It didn't work in that order. The rules are there for our good. And we see time and again that these principles are important to Jesus. And if we're going to follow Him, they need to be important to us. This is the only time where it's specifically stated that Jesus got angry. Now we assume when He goes in with the whip and is driving people out of the temple that are selling the money changers and selling animals and stuff, and He drives them. We assume He was angry. But this is the only time where it specifically says He was angry. And He was angry because they were allowing and wanted to allow someone else to suffer. We need to think about that. It tells us something about how close to the heart of Jesus human beings in bad situations where they're hurting, how close that is to His heart and how much He cares about that. Lest we be tempted to overlook or ignore the pain and the sorrow that others are suffering. Even in the book of Proverbs, the Bible talks about how the good, the righteous man will care for the one who is being mistreated, but the wicked refuses to acknowledge it. There are people suffering in our world. They need Jesus. They need healing. They need teaching. We cannot ignore that, not and be pleasing to God. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation this morning, perhaps you've hurt other people. Perhaps you just haven't helped people that you could have or should have. Perhaps you haven't put God first in your life. Maybe you put somebody else first, or maybe you put yourself first. Maybe there are other areas in your life where you've built up rules that aren't God's rules and tried to force those on other people. Whatever the case may be, if you have a need to respond to God's invitation, please come as we stand and sing.